welcome to Radio Utopistan. My name is Elisabeth Weid and I'm happy you tuned in again for some constructive stories and for people with ideas that are interconnecting the world. Today our guest is German author and filmmaker Ronja Wurmseibel. She lived and worked in Afghanistan as a journalist for almost 2 years. There she did reports about the war, about drug addiction, poverty and other really devastating things. Sometimes within all this misery, she was left hopeless and without any perspective for the future. So she started to look for the constructive aspects within her stories. For people who are trying to find a way out, for projects that are offering solutions. This is called constructive journalism or solution journalism. There are different schools and theories how exactly it's working, but basically it's about focusing on possible solutions and not so much on drama or problems. This doesn't mean to ignore problems, but rather to find possible solutions for them. Radio Utopistan is also following this line. And Ronja, she wrote a book about it, about how it's working, not only for journalists, but for all of us, because we all tell each other stories all day long. We read them, we hear them, but what kind of stories are those? What are they doing to our mind and to our mood? She was finishing the book last summer, the time when the Taliban were taking over Kabul and all of Afghanistan. So Ronja was on the phone and in the streets helping people to escape the deadly regime. In between, she was writing this book about constructive storytelling. Around her, the world was falling apart and inside her head, she was thinking about good news. It turned into a powerful and inspiring book and the call to change our look upon the world. Its title is How We See the World. It's not available in English yet, but soon there will be a version in Polish, in Czech, and in Korean, maybe in Arabic. Ronja and me, we were about to meet and talk 2 times this year because of other things, but it never turned into reality, so now I'm more than happy that we could finally talk on Radio Utopistan. Hi, Ronja.
Hi, nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm so happy you took the time and we finally could get together. And congratulations and thank you again for this amazing book. It, for me, it was something like, yeah, a light of joy and also some evidence that there is at least some sense in humanity. While the world is getting darker and darker.
Thank you. That's really nice to hear, actually.
How were your reactions so far from people?
Well, they were quite overwhelming, to be honest, because the book was published on the last day of February, and that was exactly the week when Russia invaded Ukraine. Yeah. So the news, at least in Germany, were full of war story and depressing and even scary news. So I think people really had the need and the urge to find a new perspective at least to get ideas how to handle this situation mentally, but also like practically, like how can we consume news in a way that doesn't destroy our mental health. So there were many people contacting me at one point, like we couldn't print the book quickly enough, fast enough to make it reach the stores and the numbers that needed to be there. I gave lots of interviews, lots of talks. I think it was just like not only the book, but the whole question, like how do we consume news? How do news affect our mental well-being? I think that was a question that people asked themselves. And I think it's good to ask these questions because, of course, even without a new war, it can be quite stressful to live in this field where so many news are being published and also consumed.
Yeah, definitely. And it seems we're just jumping from crisis to crisis. So how do we consume news?
Well, I think the one thing that is important to do in the beginning, like if we have never sort of faced this topic, is to understand that there is a relation between which news we consume and how we feel, even how we feel about completely different things, not only politics, but maybe our private life or our work life or social life or community life or whatever. And this is something that we definitely know by now from studies and from many researches that has been done, that negative news, also negative information, it doesn't have to come from news, it could also come from novels or movies or mm-hmm. talks or even our talking to ourselves, the stories we tell ourselves. So all these negative information strongly affects us in a way that we feel helpless. We become more passive, like we don't actively engage anymore that much in our communities, in society. We stop reading news, or we get into the full cycle of doom scrolling and just finding more and more and more negative news up until a point where we can't do it anymore. So this is like, this is fact. It's not my experience. It's not my opinion. These are the facts. Mm. And I think it's very important to understand this relationship. There's a psychologist, Jodi Jackson, and she compared it with fast food. She said, like, she wrote a book, it's called You Are What You Read, and instead of You Are What You Eat, of course. And she compares negative information with fast food. And she says, like, in the same way that we can't have nutritious food if we only go back to junk food, in the same way, we can't really nourish our minds and our view of the world if we only consume negative news. And I think this explains it very well. So what we have to do is we don't necessarily have to, we can, I think most of us could consume less news than we're doing, because we're consuming much more than most of us assume and want to even. But the more important point is actually which kind of news we consume. And so this is where we really, yeah, change can really bring a lot of help. If we stop only focusing on negative things, on problems, but whenever we focus on problems, we also focus on solutions. I wouldn't encourage people necessarily to only focus on good news or these kind of news, but more like to bring both together, to look at the problems, but then at the same time also look for solutions or perspectives that can show us how we can handle maybe these problems in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the comparison with the food, because I mean, like, our body, like every cell of our body is made from the things we eat, and so is our mind made from all the stories and things we see and read and listen to, right? And so it's quite logical that if we just put negative things in it, or poison even, that we are feeling depressed and cynical and don't manage to get out of bed anymore, even sometimes, maybe.
Yeah, I think once we start thinking about it, it's quite obvious. But it doesn't really, like, many people don't see it until they, myself included, until you start thinking about it, looking at it, reading the facts about it, looking into the research, and until that point, many people experience it. That's what the feedback is like. They experience it as just like a sort of a vast mood that it feels like, yeah, but the world really is not going great. So no wonder I'm depressed, or no wonder I'm not motivated anymore to engage in my community, or all these things. No wonder I don't want to read the news anymore. But it's still more connected to, but this is how the world is, and not to, but this is how the news are, and this is how the news make me feel. And I think that's a very important difference to make. And and even, I mean, the research even goes that far that it shows that even physically it can affect our body, like our, not only our immune system, but also the way our heart functions. And so this is all affected by not only news, but what kind of information we consume, how that affects our mental well-being. So it really is a huge thing. If we want to live a healthy life, we definitely need to think about what kind of information we consume.
And what's the difference there? The difference between the world and the news?
Well, the news, most of the time, they only focus on what is going wrong. There are definitely exceptions, but if we talk about mainstream media and mainstream news, then what they focus on is what is going not great, what happened from one day to the next, or even from 1 hour to the next. So these are very short periods of times, and in these short periods of times, it's almost impossible that good things are happening, because good things happen to take a longer time. Like, it takes longer to stop a war than to start it. It takes longer to build a house than to destroy it. So whatever is going good takes time. And so this is like a very natural factor, if you want to say so, that leads to less positive things, or not only positive, but sort of encouraging things happening to be seen in the news. But also there's like this mindset in many within the journalistic world, I would say, that only bad news are good news, which means that people are only interested in bad things that are happening, which is true to a certain point. Like the human mind is constructed in a way that we are, in fact, focusing on negative things. We are focusing on negative information, but this is sort of our, this is what we do without thinking. And once we start thinking, what we want to read, what we want to see, what we want to know is quite different to that. But the first reflex will probably always be like, oh, there's something horrible happening. I need to know about it just to sort of make sure we live a secure life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's also in the journalistic world that you're only taken serious when you're talking about the really evil things, the really evil guys. It's like, oh, we have to hunt them down and put the finger into the wound and reveal the really ugly things. Or why everybody's talking, now not that much anymore, but just a few years ago, terrorism was all over the place because it's like the worst you can imagine, or wars. So you're only taken serious when you're working in those fields. I have the impression, right?
Yeah, probably. And also, I mean, but even in these fields, like I worked in a war zone myself, or at least in a country where there was war, and I did those stories, but not necessarily those stories, but sort of in these fields. And I think even there, you can still have a constructive perspective. Like it doesn't mean that you have to report about things that are not like so-called real politics, or you can report about a war and still do it in a constructive way, just if you focus on the problems but also what needs to be done to solve them, or to sort of at least go into that direction. So that is 100% possible, but yes, many journalists don't do that yet. They don't do it yet. But at least in Germany, we're definitely not leading when it comes to constructive journalism. Mm. But I feel there is a certain movement going on during the last year, I'd say. I mean, of course, longer, but during the last year, there are bigger steps there. I think it's one reason is that there's the impression that there's one crisis after another, first COVID, then climate, now war, now energy crisis, social crisis maybe. So what I hear from many journalists within Germany is that they realize themselves what the news do to them, like especially in the beginning of March when the new war started. Many journalists told me that they are completely overwhelmed. They can't sleep anymore. They can't stop thinking about it. They're realizing that what they are creating is not even good for them. Especially not good for them, of course, because they are surrounded by it 24/7. So, and then I think many journalists are starting to think about this and starting to realize that they have, that news are actually having these effects. I think there are many journalists still who have no idea about this, who still think, oh, the harsher and the more dramatic I report about problems, the more people want to solve it. That's what many journalists assume, which is completely wrong. We know that by now. But I think that is still what many journalists assume, that they need to report very dramatically in order to wake people up. But what they actually do is like they make them fall asleep, or not asleep, but they make them go into shock and passive reactions.
They turn down the newspapers, or they don't listen to the radio anymore. They just, I mean, me too. I, to be honest, I don't follow the current news anymore, because it's just, I think the important things, I will know about them, and I rather dive deeper into topics than get in the current news.
It's what many people do. I think the latest report that I know of was this summer from Reuters Digital News Report. And they also had these figures within them that many people are actually really stopping to consume the news because it makes them feel depressed, or it makes them feel helpless, or they feel that they are stuck and they cannot bring any change into the world. Mm. So they stop consuming. And this is, I think, something that that is now sort of going into the different fields of media, at least within Germany, and I think in many other countries as well, so that people are realizing, oh, okay, so we're actually losing people. So there is some change going on. So I think also the reaction to the war and to COVID and to climate crisis, like this question, like how can we How can we change the way we talk about all these, of course, important problems that we have?
Yeah, and constructive news is not just good news, like you said. It's talking about the problem, but more about the solutions. And you have a formula for that, your very special own formula, how to make constructive news. Just shortly to show, there are different schools about constructive journalism, right? And they have different tools and theories about how it's working. But basically, it's kind of your formula. Yeah, it's a little bit of the problem and then more about the solution. You want to share your formula with us?
Yeah, it's a very simple one. I'm not sure if it works in English as well. I tried it as well last week in English, and I'm not sure it works that great as in German, but it's like shit plus X. So what I mean is, whichever problem you have, be it from a journalistic perspective or be it a personal problem or in your work life, social life, really doesn't matter. Any problem that bothers you, you can look for an X. And what I mean with X is like anything that sort of gives another perspective, that sort of could be the first step to solve the problem. It could be maybe looking at other countries, seeing how they handle this particular problem. So we have many, many problems today that are on a global level, like racism or sexism or war or poverty or climate crisis or social injustice. All these things, it's not on a national level, it's global. So that can be a depressing thought, but it's also a chance for us to look into all these other countries and see how they are handling it and sort of get recipes and idea how we could handle these certain problems ourselves. Or we can look for people who are either affected by these problems or who are maybe fighting these problems for a long time, and they have a certain expertise and knowledge and also expectations what needs to be done. We can talk to them instead of always talking to politicians who are maybe not taking the problem serious or sort of are thinking more about their own perspective on it and their own relation to it. Or we can sort of look into the past. We can see if maybe there were societies who were handling some of these problems better than we are doing it now. So what we are actually doing is we're looking for recipes to find maybe a solution if it's going great. In most cases, I'd say it's more like a first step or a first direction that we are looking for that sort of leads us to get a new idea or a new perspective to that particular problem that we are talking about.
Yeah, and I think it's also putting more pressure onto politicians or people who have power. Because, I mean, you can always say, we have problems, problems, problems. And then they say, yes, but we don't have money. We don't have time. We don't have people. But when you show them that it's working in some other place or in some other aspect or level or whatever, it's not so easy to have excuses anymore, no?
Definitely. I mean, it's sort of logic. If we only talk about the problem, we will only talk even with politicians or in our reporting, we will only focus on the problem. We will only focus on what has been done wrong. And this is a very important discussion. It definitely needs to be done. But if we stop there, then we sort of leave out the whole field of solutions. And it's also important not only to have solutions, but to talk about them and to have them in the public debate, because most of the time we don't only have one. I mean, there's rarely a perfect solution for a problem. So what that mean is we have many, many solutions that could be used, and there should be a debate about it. There should be a discussion. There should be pros and cons for each solution, and not only like, we found a solution. Great. So which is what is happening right now many times, that the discussion focuses largely on the problems and then there comes up one solution and you can be either for it or against it, but there's not that much discussion and debate about which solution do we actually need. So if we do that in reporting, then of course we are creating this new field of a public debate. And also, as you said, for politicians or for other people in power, could also be in large companies or whatever. Yeah, any person who has some power and maybe is misusing it actively or without intention. But so if they say, well, we can't do anything about it, it's a big problem, but we can't do anything about it, and then you come up with solutions and you say, yes, you actually can do something about it, then yes, as you said, then it's much more easier to sort of heighten the level of pressure that we put on them. And that is one very important function of media, to put pressure on people in power. It's one of many functions that media actually have.
Yeah, and that's why I don't understand why it's still people still kind of call it naive, this constructive journalism or the solution journalism.
I think very often there is a misunderstanding it that constructive journalism means sort of good news or happy news. So I started to call it like critical constructive journalism, which is actually like it's the same thing. It's sort of a double description. But I've realized that many people, if they hear constructive journalism, especially if they haven't maybe read about it or just like heard about it, the vast concept of it, then what many of them think is that it means to put more good news into it, to focus on good news, to focus on what's going great, and to leave out all the rest. And I think that is a great misunderstanding that is happening. And yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure the more this concept gets debated, talked about, used, this will hopefully sort of solve itself.
Yeah, I hope so too. And you say you can also apply that for your private life, right? How do you do that?
Sure. I think, I mean, in many fields, we're social human beings, are social beings. So we need stories, we need interactions, we need information to sort of not only gather information, but to also to make sure we take the right decisions. We needed to sort of build our identity. We needed to say, hey, this is a group of people I belong to. This is a group of people I don't want to belong to. So this is all made of and with stories. So story is like the thing we need in our communities. So what it means that in every level and area of our life, we tell stories, no matter what our profession is in private life, we all do that. So one thing, so there are many, many fields where we can sort of bring change. But one area that is, I think, particularly easy is small talk, because at least in Germany, the small talk we do in the beginning of a conversation is very, very negative. And most of the time it's, or actually, I would say almost all of the time, it's not the things that really sort of bother us. It's more like really not important things, like, I don't know, I got stuck in traffic, or my train was delayed, or the coffee was too hot, or the food was expensive, or things like that, that is not really, really, really important to us. And this is really important because we know from research and from studies that the way we start a conversation is sort of almost defining how the rest of it will go, like not necessarily the facts, but the sort of the mood we enter the conversation with is very determining for the rest of the conversation. So if we start a conversation with a highly negative small talk, it's very, very difficult for us to sort of turn the conversation around and bring and change it to another thing, like be it positive or even maybe neutral. So what this is really a field where we can do experiments. We can start, okay, what is happening if I change the way I do small talk, if I maybe bring one particular story that is encouraging or maybe funny or just interesting or whatever, not only negative, and then we can see how conversations really do change. I love doing that. And I'm always amazed how much it affects the rest of the conversation.
Yeah, right. I just remember an example I had yesterday with someone from a huge car company, and I was kind of nervous before the talk. And then it started with just, it wasn't really the topic. It was just the cheerful atmosphere or the sound of the voices. And then there was already the slide into the direction of positivity or of trying to connect and trying to find some common ground. Yeah.
Yeah, it really changes a lot, and it also sometimes it also changes the things you talk about. Maybe if you ask people in the beginning what was going great in their day or what they're looking forward to of the rest of the day or whatever, then you sort of jump into completely different fields of conversation that you would compare to what you would normally have. I once did a training for higher level people in the company, and they told me that they have started whenever customers arrived at their place in their office, they had stopped asking them if they found the way how sort of their arrival went, because they realized it's never great stories. It's most of the time people have problems, even tiny problems, but that sort of led to them being stuck in a conversation about what went wrong. And they realized it's not great for their, not only the business, but also the atmosphere and the relationships that they would form with the customers And so they intentionally had stopped asking this question just because they realized, or not just because, but because they realized what the effect was. So it's not something on a sort of level where you say, oh yeah, I feel better. It really does change the way we talk.
Sweet. Do they have a new question now, or do they just apply it to the situation and the person?
No, I think they sort of just ask, like, I'm not sure if they even ask anything anymore. I would have to go back to them and check that. I didn't ask, to be honest. It's a good
question. Yeah, that doesn't matter.
I didn't ask it.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, because I think, or at least from my experience, I think if you find something that's really special about that person, and even better, the connection you have with that person, and then find something positive about it, then it can spark the rest of the conversation.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
Really, yeah. Yeah, good point. Okay, it can be a game for every new person you meet, find some positive common ground.
It really is. And what makes this even more fun is that we have to do it anyway. Like, we meet new people every day, even people that we know. We usually start our conversation with small talk. And so we have to do that anyway. And it's much more fun if we sort of experiment with it. And we can prepare ourselves. Like, we can wake up in the morning and say, okay, today when I meet people, what do I want to tell them? What do I want to ask them? Like, we don't have to trust on our instincts to do it perfect, because our instincts will always sort of skip back to the negative part. But we can prepare ourselves and then sort of make this, like a challenge and a game for ourselves. And it really, like, you can try it. It really does change the way you talk with people, but also the things you talk about.
Nice. And I can also say, if you try to find positive things with people or in situation, it just gives you an energy boost. But I mean, even if we try to hide from the news, we see what's happening in the world, and it's not always looking good, also in private life. I mean, how do you find the energy or the optimism, the spirit, I don't know, to always look for your ex when everything seems to look like, problems and shit?
Well, I think definitely, especially in the situations where I feel I'm drowning in problems and crises and maybe sadness or horror, then especially in these situations, I feel the need for an ex, because this is the ex is my way out. It shows me where I can, the first step that I can do. And with that first step, what happens is that I don't feel helpless anymore. And it's still horrible, and it's still overwhelming, and it's still incredibly sad, but I'm not helpless anymore. And at least for me, and I think for many other people, crises are okay. Like, we are okay in handling crises. It's part of being human. We need to go through crises. We need to survive them. We maybe need to use them to get better in things. What we are not great with is feeling helpless or feeling out of control. So I have made the experience that finding that X is a great way to get out of the helplessness and get out of the sort of the feeling that I have no control over what's happening in my life anymore. And then I'm still, like, it doesn't mean that all the negative feelings are going away. I'm still sad. I'm still horrified. I'm still overwhelmed. I'm still angry, maybe, but I can sort of handle it. I can find my way with it. And I'd rather be in a point where I can feel all these emotions and do something with them compared to just being numb or feeling stuck with whatever emotion I have.
So going into action, you mean?
It could be going into action. It could be realizing that I really need some rest and just say, okay, my ex will be a day of rest, or maybe calling a friend or taking a walk. Like, it doesn't have to be always like, now I'm going to change the world. It's more like checking in with ourselves and seeing, okay, what do I need to feel better? And then do that compared to being maybe in a loop of what I should do or what I should feel or what I... how I should see the world, or what should be happening next. So it's also connected to accepting what is, like, whatever bad thing is in your life or in the world. Sort of first we need to accept it, and it's such a we always say that you need to accept, but if you don't accept it, you can't do anything about it. So first you accept it, and then with looking for an ex, you also accept that there is that problem. I'm not looking away. But I need to find a way to handle it. Like, this is what we do all day. It's not something very, very new. I think we are doing that. All of us are doing that every day. We have problems and we need to face them. So this formula can be a tool to sort of make it a little bit easier to, or a bit smoother to face them. But we're doing that already. All of us are facing problems already every day.
It just seems they're getting bigger and bigger, at least on a society level scale, especially with climate change on the horizon. Well, let's go, because we don't have so much time left anymore. Let's go back to a time of despair last year when the Taliban took over. And, oh, don't you want to talk about it now?
No, we can do.
Yeah.
No problem.
So you want to describe the situation and how you found your ex?
Yeah, that was probably the most horrible situation I have faced in my life ever, when all of a sudden so many good friends and partners and co-workers called me desperately in the fear of losing their lives, in the real fear of losing their lives. Mm. And wanted solutions, of course, wanted help, wanted support, needed support. And in the beginning, I had no means of any support at all, because I'm only a private person. I am sort of, it's my responsibility to help them because we work together. But at the same time, I'm not connected to a political organization, or, yeah, I don't have any political power at all. So in the first weeks, what all of us, there were many people involved, people like me who have been working in the country or knowing people in the country, who just, yeah, we just called politicians. We just tried to, there was no proper system that we could follow. There was no proper process. So we sort of tried whatever we could do. We called politicians. We wrote like hundreds of lists with informations on it and just tried to. So what we're trying to do is to get visa, of course, which is incredibly hard and only worked out with not enough people, but at least with a certain amount of people. And then we went step by step. In the beginning, I couldn't really do anything. I just sort of tried to fundraise money for organizations who were still working in Afghanistan. We were writing a petition that we were for politicians in Germany, and tried to share that. I gave interviews about why the situation is important, what we need to do now as a civil society. So these were the first really, really tiny steps that didn't feel at all like we were bringing any change, but just enough to sort of continue. And then step by step, we found ways to organize visa. We could, at least for about 15 co-workers and their families, we could get visa and invite them to Germany, or organize their way to Germany, which is then the next big thing, because it's incredibly difficult, at least at the times, to get passport and visa and all the documents that you need, and then to actually leave the country. And then when they arrived here, we made sure they had guest families so that they don't have to stay within these horrible camps. We sort of found people to take care of all the bureaucracy that needs to be done. So there were lots of steps that then followed once we took the first one. And I didn't do it because I'm such a great person. I just did it because I knew I would go crazy if I wouldn't do anything, because it was such a horrible situation. And I'm just seeing so many friends and loved ones in horror and in the honest fear of being killed. So it was sort of my way to reacting to it, because I knew if I would just sit there and look, then I'd go crazy. And I just, I didn't want that, of course.
And in the meantime, you were writing on that book about the constructive stories, right?
Yeah, I had to finish it. I had started before. The bigger part I had written before, and all the research, most of the research I had done before. But then that was also the time where I had to finish it. And I remember thinking, who are you fooling? Like, what are you doing there? You're writing a book about why the world isn't that bad. While it felt it has never been as bad as, like, this bad before. And then through writing, of course, I found my way back to the mindset where I could actually do things, where I could actually change things, and or at least try to change them.
And how is the situation now in Kabul and Afghanistan? What are you hearing from your friends and the people you are connected to?
It's not great. It's not going great. The political situation is...
It's okay. Keine Aufmerksamkeit für ihn, oder was?
Nee, unsichtbar. an Person sprechen.
Oh ja, verständlich.
It's not going great. So yeah, the political situation I think is getting worse and worse. It's very local, like depending on how the situation was before. Maybe there's for some groups now more safety, but for many groups, depending also on their ethnicity, the situation is much worse now, especially people who worked with the government before or who worked in creative fields of arts, journalism, civil society, civil rights movements, and of course women. These are all groups of people who are really, I would say many of them still fear just being killed or being in prison, things like that. And then on top of that, I think what is, I don't want to say it's more important, but what is a huge issue is just hunger. Almost, I think the last number that I have read was more than 95% of the people in Afghanistan, they face hunger.
Gosh.
So that is a situation that is really, really difficult to solve because the international community is not... I mean, there are still organizations working in Afghanistan, but not as much as before. And there's not enough money in the country because some parts of it got confiscated by the USA. So, I mean, most parts. So there is a lack of money. There is a lack of possibility. Of course, climate crisis also plays a big role in Afghanistan. There is not enough water. Hasn't been there for years, but yeah, so this is our top crisis on top of the other. So the situation is not great. What I try to focus on is to see that there are still people fighting, be it for social change, be it for political power. There's still, even if it's really, really hard, like demonstrations are forbidden and all that, but there's still, like, people have not given up. There's, for example, underground schools starting for girls who are not allowed to education otherwise. There is a big support coming from people who left Afghanistan during the last 45 years of war, of different wars, and who are now spread in the world. So many people are of course still trying to give back, to sort of connecting with their home country and the people who are still living there. So there is a big support, but the crisis is huge, and whatever support that can be done is much, much, much needed.
Yeah, that's what I found so amazing, that in the worst situations, you always find those people who don't seem to care, or that even find more power from this despair, that they find a way to help or to spread hope and inspiration. This is really, it sounds almost Christian, but it's that what gives me hope also. When you go to places where there is so much conflict and despair, you always and everywhere you find someone who's trying to change the situation for the better.
I think it's a very human thing to do, like It has found in recent research that most humans are actually helping each other in times of crisis. It's not that there's a crisis and then there's a shortage of food and then we are trying to kill each other. That's what we sort of learn from all the blockbuster Hollywood movies that we have seen about these situations. But what is most of the time actually happening is that people are helping each other and sort of trying to build something together as a community, and that is incredibly inspiring. And I think it's also what we as a global society need in terms of how we face all these problems that are, I mean, they are here, we know them by now, we have tried to look away, we have not managed, thankfully. So we know now we have all these problems and we need a way to sort of face them and to conquer them. And I think solidarity, community, working together, lifting each other up in terms of also, of course, facing racism, sexism, all these layers as well, social injustice, and sort of really working together, not only within our own white bubbles, in our case, white privilege bubbles, but really working together. I think that's the only way out to handle what's going on at the moment.
And talking to you for 45 minutes now gives me the impression that maybe we will even manage to do that. The last minutes, we have always three questions at the end. And the first is, like, what's your utopia? What's your utopistan?
My utopistan, I think, right now would be a society where we have many, many places to engage with each other, where we can work together, not on paid work, but work on whatever needs to be done for our society, and where we have a mechanism where people really from all levels get involved and get together and realize that we are all humans. There's things that are dividing us are much smaller than the things that are sort of unionizing us and unionize.
And do you see some stories, data, examples that we are moving towards that utopia?
Well, I'm finding these utopias wherever I look, let's say this way. Mm-hmm. At the moment, I'm really reading a lot of books about it, about these sort of fields, and I'm always amazed and impressed what already exists. And I have made this experience like hundreds times that I feel, I don't know everything. I don't know of everything that exists, but whenever I read a book or hear a story that I find amazing, I'm like, wow, this is already happening. And I'm finding lots of them.
Sweet. And what can people do to support this utopia?
Well, unionize, get together whenever you face a problem on a level that is more than yourself, or even if it's only a problem within your own family, get together, talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends, try to find a solution that is not only including you or people that you pay for, but try to get together and meet other people who are facing similar problems and then find better solutions.
Thank you, Ronja. That sounds amazing.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening. We hope it could give you some inspiration during these times of conflict and crises everywhere. But as we saw today and also in our previous episodes, there are people working on solutions everywhere. People who dedicate their life to protect nature, to fight racism and sexism, or to bring healing to the places they live in. In Ayotzinapa, Mexico, for example, in Tanzania, or in occupied Palestine. They show you how not to lose hope. Have a look into our previous episodes and find some ideas and inspiration. And of course, right now, the women of Iran are on the streets, and also the men. But it started with the women. They are there courageously protesting against their oppressive regime. The bloodshed is high, but some say those protests, they might end the mullah's regime and finally bring freedom to Iran. We hope in the future we can talk to one of the protesters there. And if you want, you can support Radio Utopistan. That would be great, actually. So far, we still don't really have a business model and are just working on it in our free time. You could make a contribution on our website, for example, or on Patreon. You can leave reviews on Apple Podcasts, and you can share the stories you liked with your friends and family or your platforms and publications. Thank you. We really appreciate any support. It does make a difference. My name is Elisabeth Weidt. Radio Utopistan team for this episode are editor and executive producer Charlotte Horn and Christina Fimöbus, music Robert Pilgram, IT Johannes Weidt, accountant Elena Weidt, and you. Thanks for being here. That's why we are here. Bye-bye and see you soon.